Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're happy you could join us this Sunday morning. And before we get started, I just want to remind you that just because you hear us discuss certain tax facts, certain tax strategies, maybe a real estate private partnership syndication offering or so, please don't run out and execute or seek to execute what you're hearing, and let's get you to check with your existing advisors, legal, tax, real estate, investment, etc., and let's make sure that you understood what you thought you heard, and furthermore, let's make sure it's something that applies to your specific facts and circumstances. So in any event, for those of you that don't have existing advisors that might be able to opine on these topics, such as real estate taxation, retirement plan taxation, and the use of your retirement plan funds to invest in real estate private partnership syndications, or perhaps you're one of those that are interested in getting to the zero tax rate by the time you reach retirement, well, then feel free to go to our website at BAPlannerShow.com. That's BAPlannerShow.com. And go to the forms link and fill out step one, form one, that you'll see there. It's the client profile, and that will give us enough information to have a call with you if you'd like to schedule a call using the link right next to the form link. So in any event, well, we have an interesting show today, I think. I hope CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, there was a report in or an article in Fortune this week that kind of draws a circle around the issue that we're faced with, and it's in large measure about the February update that CBO made predicting the future government budget deficits out through 2034, but it's got some, this current article has some facts that it really drives home the mess that we're in, and I'll be happy to share with you some of Jamie Dimon's comments, the CEO of Chase Bank, and it's dire. That's all I can tell you. And we're going to keep talking about Roth conversions. Why? Because Roth conversions, if you have pre-tax money, is the way for you to hang on to a bigger piece of it than if you don't undertake Roth conversions. And I know there's reasons not to do it. We discussed those that were in an article last week that Kiplinger had. And I'm just going to tell you, they left off some of the best reasons that you should consider converting, but needless to say, the reasons that are against that option pale in comparison to some of the pros, some of the reasons you should undertake those conversions. If you're in the real estate private partnership space especially, and we'll try to spend a little time on that before we get through the show. I also have, just for some lighter fare, I have an article that I get from one of my sources. I believe this came from my associate, Dan DuBose. It's called Jim's Daily Awakenings. It's a newsletter that Dan looks like here subscribes to, and it's got a collection of current data, most of it about, well, it's not necessarily the economy, it's about the just the U.S. in general, typically, and some of these things are, well, they're just intriguing at any level. But anyway, we'll go into some of those, and at least one of them, I believe, has a bit of budget deficit talk, and again, it's not positive. So the budget deficit is getting attention from all sides, and it's not just this week. Virtually every week we could have this type of discussion. But in any event, let's talk about some of the fascinating facts that are on this email list. The first up is, according to the U.S. Department of Education, before the pandemic, about 15% of students were chronically absent, which typically means chronic is described as missing 18 days of the school year for any reason. By the 2021-2022 school year, that number had rocketed to 28% of students. In the 22-23 school year, the most recent for which national estimates are available, chronic absenteeism held stubbornly at 26%. That's crazy. That's one out of every four students, plus a little. And it's no way to run an education system of your young people, is what I would suggest. Second fact is, an analysis by the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism shows that in 2023, Americans over 65, not quite my age group, just if you're counting, in 2023, Americans over 65 accounted for 38% of the alcohol consumption. Next fact, the median home sale price is $417,700 as of the fourth quarter of 2023. Excuse me. That's a 37% increase from the first quarter of 2020. That is a mere 4 years ago, when the median was $329,000, again, across America. So it's one of the averages we use, the median. And as I've discussed before, average does not necessarily mean you. We're all standard or normal. And in fact, I was talking to a gentleman just earlier today that was buying a home, having a new home built in San Antonio. And, you know, it was not a big home, but we're seeing a reduction in the size to deal with these increased prices. And he was talking about purchasing a roughly $220,000 home, brand new. So, you know, there's an individual that's certainly well below the median. So those are still out there. But, you know, the problem is, whatever you think about median sales prices of homes, the average American income needed to buy a home is $113,520. That is 35% more than what the typical household earns annually, which is $84,072. Excuse me. And that's indicative of why the rental market continues to hold up. Sure, the increased deliveries that have come into the market have cost caused the rental growth rate, the growth in the rate of rent, to decline a bit. but it's still a strong market. And this is why. $84,000 annual income will qualify to rent many houses, much more so than you can buy. So in any event, again, the median home sales price, this is across the country, $417,700 as of the fourth quarter, 2023. Okay, the fourth fact, and this is something that we're getting ready to delve into in more detail with respect to the national deficit, is, let's see, who makes this quote? Looks like it's Niall Ferguson. I'm trying to understand who he's with, but in any event, we'll assume it's true just because we know it's dire enough. It likely is. Quote, any great power that spends more on debt service, that's interest payments on the national debt, let's see, will not stay great for long. If it spends more on, I'm sorry, if it spends more on debt than it does the national defense, will not stay great for very long. And later this year, according to the Congressional Budget Office, net interest outlays will be 3.1% of GDP. 3.1% of GDP will be what we're spending on interest outlays for interest on the debt. Defense spending at that time will be 3.0%. By 2041, the CBO projects that interest payments, which will then be 4.6% of GDP, this is by 2041, and that's CBO that's making that projection, so it's certainly not some wild right-wing conspiracist, just for those of you that are paying attention. But at that point, interest payments are projected to be double the defense budget, which at that time has dropped to 2.3% of GDP. By comparison, between 1962 and 1989, interest payments averaged 1.8% of GDP, while defense spending was 6.4%. Those are some striking changes when you look at our country's economy, which in large measure is directly related to our deficit. And it's going to be more so when we can't borrow money. We can't no longer borrow money, or at least borrow it at the same rate to fund the government spending on that occurs, the piece that does relate to our economy. And it's amazing the impact excuse me, that borrowing has on each facet of the economy. We're only talking about defense at this moment. U.S. banks, another fact, U.S. banks will likely have to cut their exposure to commercial real estate because of the wall of property debt coming due in the next 3 years. This is something we've talked about. I don't have the current number in front of me, but it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's still over $1 trillion that will come due over the next 3 years. And when I say come due, typically in the real estate arena, that means it needs to be refinanced. And it's a bad time for banks needing to cut their exposure at the same time you've got this significant volume of loans that are coming due and need to be refinanced. So it will be interesting to watch how our economy deals with that. And of course, there's going to be foreclosures. There would have to be. And it's a matter of, you know, the opportunities for the real estate investor, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's kind of like a snake shedding its skin, so to speak. It's a economic reality that there's going to be failure, and in turn, the failure yields opportunities for those that have capital and are ready to take advantage of the situation with those properties. Let's do this. This is a good spot for us to take a break, and we will do so now. And we'll return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. Nathan at npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Like the song. I'm just longing to be free. Take me away, I wanna be. Big dreams and fake dreams. And there are many just like me.
With big dreams and fake dreams.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we've been discussing some fascinating facts brought to us by Jim's Daily Awakening. It's a newsletter that my associate Dan DuBose subscribes to. And I occasionally like to discuss these points. They're seemingly random points that illustrate issues with the economy or with the deficit or even this topic. The next point here on this list is involving fentanyl, and I know we all think we know that it's such a significant problem, and of course it's going to be in the news even more with the upcoming debate this coming week. I'm sure Mr. Trump will point out what a bad job the Biden administration has done in controlling the border, where a lot of fentanyl apparently comes in. But in any event, data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention shows that between November 2019 and October 2023, 270,000 Americans died of an overdose from fentanyl, which is a synthetic opioid. By comparison, between 1964 and 1975, so let's see, 64 to 75 is about 11 years. The CDC report was from November 19 to October 23. That's 4 years. So in a period twice as long, roughly 58,300 members of the U.S. Armed Forces were killed or went missing in action in the Vietnam War. So fentanyl has managed to claim, let's see if we divide 270 by 4, what is that, roughly 70, a little bit under 70,000. The point is, you divide that by 4 to get to an annual number, so annually, we've lost more Americans from overdoses of fentanyl, or from fentanyl, than we lost for the entire war between 64 and 75 in Vietnam. That's a striking statistic. And if you didn't realize just how bad of an issue fentanyl overdoses are, this kind of highlights it for you. Last fascinating fact this week is Redfin reports that 49.9%, that's right at half, of U.S. homeowners and renters sometimes or regularly struggle to afford their housing payments. That's not a good statistic for the economy, because if they're having a hard time affording their housing payment, they're having a hard time affording life, is what I would suggest, because I think, you know, when you look at creditworthiness, paying your rent on time or making your loan payment on time is probably sitting in the first position in terms of your credibility with regard to, you know, credit qualification, etc. So not a good statistic. I'll just point out, since we were able to use this data this week on the show, we'll also give you information about Jim, or at least his new book. Jim, let's see here. He's got a new book called A Guide to Behavioral Change, A 12-Step Approach to Personal Transformation and Religionless Christianity. I haven't read the book, but it does pique my curiosity based on some of the info that this gentleman provides on a monthly basis, and I will seek to learn more about that book and perhaps comment on the air. And for those of you that would like to subscribe, you can do so to this, I believe it's a monthly report. You can do so at, let's see if I can find the link here. Let's see, it's looks like JDA at dailyawakenings.com. JDA at dailyawakenings.com. Okay, let's go back to the main focus today, which is the, I guess what caught my eye was Jamie Dimon. In a Fortune article, believes that the U.S. public debt is the most predictable crisis the economy faces. And yet, in just three months, America has added $2.1 trillion to its tab. And this is under the president that claimed he had cut the deficit by $2 trillion just recently. And I don't know, either he's got a problem with math or he's not really telling us the truth. And I tend to think it may be a little bit of both. America's public debt problem is no longer an issue which can be swept under the rug, according to this article. Everyone from Wall Street veteran Jamie Powell to Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, I'm sorry, Jamie Dimon, I was reading ahead. Everyone from Wall Street Journal veteran Jamie Dimon to Fed Chair Jerome Powell is sounding the alarm. But while some of the most influential figures in the economy are calling for an action plan, the government has continued to spend at a rate which will add $2 trillion to the country's bill by 2034. Let's read that again. While some of the most influential figures in the economy are calling for an action plan, the government has continued to spend at a rate which will add $2.1 trillion to the country's bill by 2024. It's wrong on so many levels, but it's quite a growth rate in the wrong direction. If we were cutting it, the deficit by $2 trillion, it would be welcomed, but it would still not really put much of a dent in the outstanding cumulative public debt. Let's go on. That's according to the latest report out of the Congressional Budget Office, or CBO, and this is referring to the updated 10-year forecast that was issued back in February of this year. In February, the CBO said it's predicted deficit for the year was $1.5 trillion, growing to $2.6 trillion by 2034. However, in a report released this week, the CBO wrote, in CBO's current projections, the deficit for 2024 is $400 billion. That's 27% larger than it was. Let's see, $400 billion is 27% larger than it was in the agency's February 2024 projections. That's crazy. That's just in a few months. It's actually gotten so much worse that they felt the need to issue this warning. And further, the cumulative deficit over the 2025 to 2034 period is larger by $2.1 trillion. That's 10%. So therein lies the truth, and I say truth, it is CBO after all, let's not forget. I don't think CBO would make it appear any worse than it already is. In fact, if anything, they might be light on analyzing the impact. But this is in the face of ongoing student loan forgiveness debt, military aid to other countries, increased domestic spending. It's like the people running our country have no clue what's really going on in the overall. And again, the cumulative deficit projected over 2025 to 2034 has gotten larger by $2.1 trillion, or 10% of the deficit that was originally projected for that period just in the last few months. Currently, the national debt stands at $34.7 trillion. Though the figure itself is not what has so many economists worried. Instead, experts are concerned about America's debt to GDP ratio, which indicates how much the country owes versus what it produces, and thus how able is it to pay it back. And this debt to GDP ratio is what, you know, individual members of Congress have long used to downplay the effect of new legislation that they might be promoting or they might be against. They use this debt to GDP ratio however it suits their purpose. But the point is, there's a reason they use it, because the debt to GDP ratio is, again, in most economists' mind, it indicates how much the country owes versus what it produces, and thus how able it is to pay it back. And I've said before here on the show that the cumulative debt, what now is $34.7 trillion, wouldn't be a problem if we could find the GDP tree, quote-unquote, and somehow duplicate the current GDP in triplicate form. So if we could raise GDP by three times, we'd have no problem. We would have raised enough money, or at least be well on the way to raising enough receipts, government receipts in the form of tax collections, that we would have no issues paying back the $34.7 trillion. And by the way, I tell you what, let's take a break. Let's go ahead and take our last break, and I'll come back here in a few moments and we'll pick up more on this topic of outstanding government debt. We'll be right back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just talking about the debt, the government, America's debt to GDP ratio, and the fact that that's what indicates how much the country owes versus what it produces, and thus how able it is to pay it back. And yet, unfortunately, the $34.7 trillion amount that we mentioned is not really the correct number if you talk about what we owe. We owe far more than that, and it's estimated by many economists, because there's a lot of assumptions that go into that unfunded mandate total that we have, and these will be items that are already baked in to our budget going forward, things like indexing increases in Social Security, Medicare, assorted government programs that haven't kicked in yet that are already legislated, and they've already been approved essentially by Congress. The president signed off on them. They're already out there. They just didn't make it into the current year in terms of when they take effect. Therefore, we don't count that as a liability on our balance sheet. Unlike what you and I, if we were producing a financial for your company, if you've got a liability such as the ones that we as a nation have that we're not funding in the current year, but we owe, we would need to report that under generally accepted accounting principles on our balance sheet. Now, it might go into a deferred liability category, But nonetheless, it would be disclosed. It would be more than a footnote to those financials. And so, you know, we're the only developed economy that doesn't report that information. And all the other, I don't know if it would be the G20 or G7, whatever it is, it's many, many, many countries report the information related to their future obligations on their balance sheet. But in any event, back to the concept of how much our country owes versus what it produces, and thus how able, quote unquote, we are to pay it back. The CBO didn't have stellar news on that account either. It reported debt held by the public will rise from 99% of GDP this year, which I'm going to suggest they're a little bit light on that number. Most economists, or many, I shouldn't say most, although it may be most, think we're well over 100% of GDP at this moment. But, okay, it's CBO. Again, I said don't necessarily trust their data when it comes to the low view that they often take. In any event, the CBO reported that debt held by the public will rise from 99% this year to 122% of GDP by 2034, surpassing its previous high of 106% in 1946 at the end of the Civil War. And understand, we're talking about percentages here, folks. We're not talking about the actual dollars. I mean, that's the $34.7 trillion, or, as many economists will tell you, $150 trillion when you add in the unfunded mandate. And or unfunded mandates, it's plural. And you know, these percentages, I don't have the budget number handy back in 1946, but I can assure you we were well under the current annual budget that we have now. And I guess there is some relevance to the fact that these percentages are being used, but it's so much more money that's at play now than back in 1946. And interestingly, as this article continues, and war is, once again, just like it was back in 1946 at the end of the Second World War, war is once again one of the major factors contributing to America's ongoing outlays. The CBO adds, quote, the largest contributor to the cumulative increase was the incorporation of recently enacted legislation, which added added 1.6 trillion to projected deficits. That legislation included emergency supplemental appropriations that provided $95 billion for aid to Ukraine, Israel, and countries in the Indo-Pacific region. I'm presuming that would be folks like Taiwan, probably the Philippines, maybe South Korea. On top of the initial legislative hit is the ongoing funding obligations America is legally required to uphold, boosting outlays by $900 billion through the year 2034. While financial support to nations at war forms a chunk of the increase between the February 2024 projection and this month's, in other words, this $2.1 trillion projected increase, other obligations form the crux of America's tab. So it's not just the war chunk or war portion of the increase. We're spending, outspending our means on many other fronts. What the CBO defines as mandatory spending includes the likes of Medicare and Social Security, as well as defense spending and unemployment compensation. The CBO wrote, "The aging of the population causes the number of the number of beneficiaries of Social Security and Medicare to grow faster than the overall population. We're growing the number of daily new admissions into these programs." This is now, and I'm not quoting the article, I'm referring to another article I was reading this week. There's 11,200 birthdays of folks that are turning 65 for quite a few years. I don't have that number handy. I may try to find it here before the end of the show, but it's amazing the increase from the period 2024 to 2034. The article wraps up this section of the article by saying that as a result of these two trends, outlays for Social Security and Medicare increase in relation to GDP from 2024 to 34, and it's a significant increase. But guess what? It's not as significant as the interest on the debt. And interest on the debt right now, at this moment, if you look at the U.S. DebtClock.org site, which tracks the four largest components in the federal deficit, and I don't have that up right at the moment, but I've got it burned into my memory bank. The number one position on the budget's annual components is Medicare and Medicaid. It's roughly, what is it now, $2.1 trillion, I believe. Social Security is next at $1.7. Defense is, at just this moment, third at roughly $880 billion. And interest is right there next to it at about 860 something, I believe, billion. But by the end of the year, the interest on the debt will surpass the defense number and be solidly in the third highest budget component in terms of our spending. It's just amazing. And again, over the next 10 years, it leapfrogs everything. It'll be in the number one spot. Predictable crisis, which is what Jamie Dimon was saying, that it's a entirely predictable, the most predictable crisis facing our country. Experts remain divided on how much of an issue public debt will prove to be, and when it comes down to how necessary they believe the spending is and their outlook for the economy moving forwards. Those on the bullish end are hopeful that an uptick in economic growth, i.e. somebody finds the GDP tree and we're able to make it stronger, taller, etc., or we duplicate it. The hope is that for those that are bullish that we will find significant increases in economic growth that will offset the debt and the interest payments going forward. They also add that the vast majority of spending in recent years under various political parties has been absolutely critical for the country to navigate the likes of the coronavirus pandemic. Well, you know, there's some folks that disagree with that without getting into too much of the politics. We basically thumbed our nose at an inexpensive solution. There may have been others, but the one that's currently getting a lot of renewed publicity is the use of the drug ivermectin. You may have seen Chris Cuomo's recent interview, and of course he was one of the leading opponents towing the pharma line of, you know, ivermectin was worthless against Corona, and further, it was a shock. It was a medicine made for animals, which I guess they don't understand that almost every medicine we humans take has a similar application, maybe a different dosage, but it's the same medicine that's used with animals, you know, be it doxycycline or be it some blood pressure medicine. Medicine is not necessarily identical, but in the case of ivermectin, there was a version that absolutely worked for coronavirus. You can, I don't have it in front of me, but there is a map that was produced at one point I saw a couple years ago of the continent of Africa, and it showed the countries that had been using ivermectin as its main tool in the fight of avoiding death from coronavirus versus the countries in Africa that did not, and it was striking the number of deaths that occurred in the ones that did not deploy ivermectin. And, you know, the big issue with ivermectin, the reason I bring it up here, is they talk about the cost of the pandemic. Well, had we used ivermectin, ivermectin's a very low-cost drug relative to what the vaccines cost. And, of course, the government paid for a significant volume of vaccines. Further, the government shut down entire industries that had a significant cost to the country and to the economy. And so when you look at the statement that, you know, it was absolutely critical, critical that we navigate the likes of the coronavirus, but hey, we had choices, and unfortunately, I'm going to suggest the wrong choices got made on assorted fronts here, and I'm not necessarily going to say the vaccine itself did not save lives. I'll suggest that there were other factors at play, and, you know, I can give you, I'm not going to go into the examples, but I'll just tell you there were people that withstood coronavirus that never saw a vaccine, and there were those that vaccinated that passed undoubtedly from the effect of the vaccine. And so I would say it's far from certain that the vaccine saved anywhere near the millions of lives that have been indicated and for which Nobel Peace Prizes were granted to those that were involved in developing the mRNA technology. And again, we could get real political if we chose to, but it's unfortunate that we added the trillions of dollars to the debt without a very clear outcome as to the benefit of that expenditure. Of course, that's all of our public debt. You could probably look at the entire the part we acknowledge, the $34.7 trillion, and find that it's somewhat debatable as to the economic benefit that we may have realized. On the matter of economic growth, continuing on here, the CBO disagrees with this outlook. In its June update, the nonpartisan organization, boy, that's stretching the word, wrote it expects the economy to grow more slowly in calendar years 2024 and 2025 than it grew in 2023, averaging roughly 1.8% between 2026 and, I guess I should say before averaging, roughly 1.8% between 2026 and 2034. On the more cautious side of the argument are those who, while conscious of the nature of spending in recent years, want to see administrations exercise more constraint or restraint, or at least set out a plan for how they'll curb their outlays in the future. You know, and that's part of the problem. How many plans have we seen, quote, set out for how to curb outlays in the future, end quote, over the years. I can remember we actually had a balanced budget amendment at one time, did we not? In fact, I believe it passed back in the, the 90s. I think it was well past the 80s. But I don't see that having, I mean, there were so many exceptions to that amendment. I'm not even sure it's supposedly still in force. I just know that it hasn't been achieved. And so it's really not relevant to the discussion. It's like part of our history. Among those that are arguing for curbing the outlays, the annual congressional spending, among those is J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon and former Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. Of the two of those, Paul Ryan has contributed a lot more to the cumulative national debt than Jamie Dimon. I would argue that Jamie Dimon has been a constant, steady voice in this overall argument. Former Congressman, House Speaker Paul Ryan was warned long ago. The 2009 delivery by CBO of what would need to happen to cut the national deficit showed tax rates would need to go up by 150%, the tax brackets at that time. I don't recall seeing Paul Ryan champion that cause at all. And I understand Paul Ryan in and of himself could not raise the tax rates or the tax brackets. However, as Speaker of the House, he certainly had the gavel and could have moved towards that. And in fact, I believe at that point we had, I can't remember if we had control of both houses, but I'm pretty certain we had control of at least one of them, or he wouldn't have been Speaker, right? So the House of Representatives was at least in the GOP control. But in any event, it's interesting that the way congressmen speak back about prior years when they were involved, I guess they seem to think it lends credibility to the argument. But Ryan, earlier this year at an event at the Bipartisan Policy Center, described the debt spiral as the most predictable crisis we've ever had. Well, I think at this point we're right at the end of the show, and I'm going to draw a line here on this article. We'll come back to this perhaps on our Thursday show and pick up with the significant problem that this public debt has become and that CBO is now recognizing. In any event, I appreciate you tuning in this week, and we hope you can join us again on Thursday, 2 p.m., with a new version of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.